Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah.
Welcome to a brand new week of Drive Time Sports. Here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini, and there is definitely a lot to talk about on this Monday edition of the show. We're back live in the studio, the KOAL newsroom. Last Friday, we were on the road at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. It was a fun show, though. If you missed it, we had David Reagan of the Monster Energy Cup Racing Circuit and also Bubba Wallace of the Xfinity Series. It was fun. Get some driver perspective here on the show. We did also talk a lot of college basketball Friday because the Pac-12 tournament was in Las Vegas at the very same time as the NASCAR season. So, yeah, Friday was a lot of fun. Now we're back to the normal schedule. Things slowed down a little bit. Seems like the last 3 to 4 weeks have been crazy busy on the weekends here on the on Drive Time Sports between basketball tournament play and, you know, going on the road for NASCAR. Now we're back to the normal schedule. Today we're going to talk some local sports. The Emory Spartan baseball team, hey, they were on the road in Nevada as well. They traveled to Mesquite. They played 4 games in 3 days, won all 4 games. Coach Sean Alton is going to join us on the show today. And also, we'll take a look at the NCAA tournament. I've studied this bracket in depth today, and I've gone over the numbers, and I have to say kudos to the selection committee. I think they nailed it. I don't think that there is anyone this year, and I'm one of the biggest critics when it comes to the NCAA and the way we do the tournament at the end of the season. I know people love March Madness. I, for one, have really struggled with the fact that the automatic bids go to conference tournament champions instead of outright champions. And I think there's too much of an emphasis on tournaments at the end of the season, not enough emphasis on the regular season itself. I still think that the bracket, it's perfect as far as the 64 teams. I may not necessarily agree with the seeding, but I do believe, I think you got to look at the body of work of the season, and Duke being a number two, meh. But I mean, all in all, when you look at the 68, 64 teams that are in it, whatever you want to call it, I think we got the right set. We'll take a look at a few surprises a little bit later on in the show, but again, for the most part, I think the selection committee knocked it out of the park. Let's take a look at some of the other news that is circulating around the national sports scene. DeMarcus Ware announced via Twitter today that he's retiring from the NFL. It's kind of sad. I think this guy right here had a brilliant career, and he was able to make it work with 2 different franchises. He saluted in tweets both the Denver Broncos and the Dallas Cowboys. Remember, he's the Cowboys' all-time sacks leader with 117. John Elway, here's what he had to say on his Twitter. DeMarcus, you are the epitome of what an NFL player should be. Congrats on your Hall of Fame career, and thank you for becoming a Bronco. The Cowboys also responded, wishing all the best to the franchise sack leader as he retires from the NFL. He's a Cowboy for life. Ware went to the Broncos back in 2014. Aqib Talib, Emmanuel Sanders, TJ Ward, they also signed. They were huge, huge signings for the Broncos. Played in at least 1 Pro Bowl since then. You had Von Miller as well. I mean, that was just a vaunted defense. And I really credit John Elway. And I know I don't want to get too far away from DeMarcus Ware and what he has accomplished. But John Elway really proved what type of a football mind he is. He took a team that was geared around offense to the Super Bowl. They get blown out. A year removed from the Super Bowl, they get back as a defensive juggernaut. That's John Elway's vision right there. And a lot of it had to do with the fact that DeMarcus Ware was a team captain with the Broncos, universally respected within the locker room. This is a guy that if he's in a wheelchair, you want him on your roster. Because frankly, him just being around the team in the locker room makes your squad better front to back. So 34 years old, has to call it a career because of back problems, which really, that's why. I mean, we're talking about a 34-year-old guy who appears to be a little bit older than what he is out on the field at this stage in his career, and it's because of his back injuries. Been a part of his career, especially the past two seasons. I mean, it's been a big reason as to why he's been slowed down a little bit. But still, when you look at this career, 9-time Pro Bowler, 8th all-time in sacks with 138.5. Needed just one sack to tie Jason Taylor, who is now in the Hall of Fame himself. 4 sacks would have passed Michael Strahan and moved him into 6th place all-time. So we're talking about very elite company. In 9 seasons with the Cowboys, he went to the Pro Bowl every season between 2006 and 2012. Career low in sacks in 2013, I believe, is when it was. That's when he missed a few games due to an injury, and then the Cowboys released him after that season. The Cowboys selected Ware back in the first round in 2005, and now his career is finished. But again, that is a Hall of Fame career, so congratulations to DeMarcus Ware. It was definitely fun to watch that guy play during his time in the league. Let's move over to baseball. How about Tim Tebow? He got his first hit of spring training today. Have you been following the Tebow madness, the Tebow mania that has swept spring training baseball? Started off 0-8, and he got a single today in an exhibition game against the Marlins. Kyle Lobenstein, the left-hander, is the one that delivered the pitch. Tebow was then basically erased from the pads the next at-bat due to a double play. But he batted 8th. And his appearance in the lineup was a surprise to a lot of people. Terry Collins said that there's no plans to bring him back. The Mets needed players because of the World Baseball Classic. You know that tournament that everybody is ranting and raving about that I don't like at this particular time of the year? That's why Tim Tebow got a start today. But I guess it's what the fans wanted to see. Let's take a look at the schedule in the NBA. We're not quite there to Major League Baseball yet. It's still an NBA-dominated schedule. And there's a huge game tonight. Right here on KOAL. 7 o'clock, the Jazz will take on the Clippers. How important is this game? The Clippers right now are the 5 seed. They're at 40-26. The Jazz are the 4 seed at 41-25. Now, the Jazz are 5.5 back of Houston, but they are 4 up on OKC. So, with 16 games left to go in the season, the Jazz and the Clippers are in a battle right now for home court advantage. Jazz need this win tonight. This is a monumental game. I hate the matchup with the Clippers for the Jazz, by the way. If they go to the postseason and go toe-to-toe with one another, I hate this matchup for the Jazz. I think it's a bad matchup. You need home court advantage in this series if you want to get past the opening round. And right now, that doesn't look too bad. At first, it seemed like a death sentence because you would get the Warriors in round number 2. Things are starting to open up. And I think the Jazz can actually match up well in the second round, be it the Warriors or the Spurs. The Jazz need this one tonight. This is the biggest game of the year up to this point. 7 o'clock tip-off. David Locke, Ron Boone will bring you the play-by-play call. Live coverage will get rolling at 6:50. Other games tonight, 5 o'clock hour, Chicago at Charlotte, Dallas at Toronto. 6 o'clock, we get Milwaukee at Memphis, Atlanta at San Antonio, and then Washington at Minnesota. 8:30 tonight, we get Orlando at Sacramento, and then we get the Lakers at the Nuggets. That's a quick check of everything happening in the national sports front. Again, on the show today, we're going to talk some college basketball. Also, Coach Sean Alton of the Emory Spartan baseball team will join us. Plus, we'll go over NASCAR. Yesterday at the Cobalt 400, it was kind of crazy. Kyle Busch, Joey Logano, they got into it. I think Kyle Busch landed a punch on Joey Logano, but Logano's crew, they took care of the rest. They protected their driver. And that was just a very interesting way to end the NASCAR weekend. Kyle Busch on the ground, bleeding from his forehead, after Joey Logano took a solid right from Kyle Busch. At least from my view, that's what it looked like. We'll talk more NASCAR coming up here in just a bit as well. It's a Monday edition of Drive Time Sports, and we're back right after this. Reporting from the KOAL Newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. The Carbon Dino boys baseball team picked up their first victory of the season this weekend as they traveled down south to St. George for the annual Pizza Hut Classic. After losing the season opener last week to Springville, the Dinos dipped to 0-2 on Thursday with an 8-0 loss to Dixie. The Dinos did claw their way back. They defeated Mountain Crest later on in the day, 13-12, and followed that up with a 14-13 win over Payson. The weekend came to a close as Carbon suffered a 10-0 loss to Cedar. In the team's one-run victory over Payson, the Dinos were led by Gavin Robinette, who finished with 2 hits and 4 at-bats. Also, Cody Lowe registered 2 hits and 2 RBIs. 3 RBIs went to Chase Morgan. The senior had 5 at-bats. He finished with 1 run and 1 hit to lead Carbon offensively. The team will now take a little bit of a break before they return to action. Up next, they'll take on the Emory Spartans on March 21st, 8 days away. Following the lengthy break, Carbon will take on a couple of other familiar opponents, including Grand and Union. The Emory Spartan baseball team continue to play hot baseball as they won 4 games in 3 days, traveling to Mesquite, Nevada for a preseason tournament. The Spartans won the tournament championship, easily winning their last game by a final score of 11-3. In that game, Zach Jorgensen pitched for the victory, giving up just 1 earned run while striking out 5 in 5 innings of action. The Spartans were led by Jordan Beletka. He finished with 3 RBIs. Logan Labrum notched 2, and Coda Alton had 1. The victories for Emory over the weekend included a 16-0, a 5-2, a 13-0, an 11-3 affair. Spartans will now continue the season as they take a couple of days off, but returning to the field on Wednesday, traveling to Union. The next home game will be this Friday against Millard. We stick with baseball, but we move over to the junior college ranks, where the USU Eastern Eagles finished 1-3 on the weekend, playing host to Salt Lake Community College. The Eagles lost 2 closely contested games on Friday, 5-4, and again by 5-4. The first game on Saturday, USU Eastern got a 3-0 win, and they lost the fourth game by a final score of 7-5. In Saturday's victory, the Eagles were led by starting pitcher Chase Stratt. He pitched a complete game, giving up 0 earned runs while striking out 7 in 7 innings of action. Offensively, the Eagles were led by Cole Fawcett, who had 1 RBI, registering 2 at-bats, that RBI coming off of a sacrifice. Zach Lundell recorded the team's lone extra base hit with a double. For the game, both teams finished with 3 hits. USU Eastern committed 1 error compared to Salt Lake's 3. The Eagles are now sitting at 3-5 on the season. They'll now travel on the road this upcoming week to Moore Stadium in Henderson, Nevada to take on the College of Southern Nevada. Stay tuned to Castle Country Radio. We'll have more on the USU Eastern baseball team in the coming days. We move over to softball, and the USU Eastern Lady Eagles dipped to 1-7 in conference play as they suffered a 4-game sweep on the road at the hands of Salt Lake. First contest resulted in a 14-6 win for the Bruins. The second, a 15-1 loss for the Lady Eagles, losing the next game 12-2, and then the fourth game 9-0. The Lady Eagles have been on the road for their first 8 games of conference play. That'll change this weekend as they take on the College of Southern Nevada. And finally, we end by moving over to the national sports scene, where the Utah Jazz will make their return to KOAL 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM tonight. The Jazz have an important matchup with the Los Angeles Clippers. Tip-off for this game is set for 7 p.m. at Vivint Smart Home Arena. David Locke and Ron Boone will bring you the play-by-play call at 6.50. Reporting, I'm Jordan Buscaritti.
There's no crying in baseball!
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss the play ball!
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
Holy cow!
Some high school baseball to get this brand new week of the show off and rolling. It was a busy one for the Emory Spartans. They, too, traveled to Nevada this past weekend. They were in Mesquite for a 4-game tournament, and very interesting. They had to play the same team 3 times in 4 games. You don't see that too often, but it's just the way the tournament broke. We're going to talk a little bit about this past weekend right now with Coach Sean Alton. His team remains unbeaten at a perfect 5-0 in the season following a 4-0 trip to Nevada. Coach, as always, I appreciate you taking out the time to join us. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Jordan.
Coach, we'll start by talking about this past week for you guys. I mean, not too shabby at all. You guys travel to Mesquite. You have 4 games in just a couple of days, and you guys come back perfect 4-0, and you top Virgin Valley in the tournament championship game Saturday. So all in all, it was a good weekend for the team.
It was. It was. They played extremely well, and I'm very happy with the team.
As far as the pitching performance, that's what I really want to dive into immediately here, Coach, and talk about what you guys were able to establish on the mound. I mean, looking at the box score in the championship game, I know Zach Jorgensen was really good for you guys. Pitched 5 innings, gave up just 3 hits, struck out 5. So, I mean, all in all, when you look at all the pitching, starting pitching performances front to back, how did you assess the way the kids performed?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they did phenomenal. You know, that's probably my the one thing that really stands out in my mind, Jordan, is the way the kids performed, the way they competed. They just got it done on the mound. And, you know, more importantly, with the way these new pitching rules are, they threw a lot of strikes. And we made plays for them. So I was extremely pleased with the way our pitching went.
Tell Gardner was another individual I know that pitched very well for you guys Friday against Virgin Valley, the same team that you guys beat in the championship. He gives up just 5 hits in 6 innings. He strikes out 8. I mean, so all in all, again, a very strong performance from Tell Gardner. He's gotten off to a great start so far this year.
He has. You know, he's our senior leader, and we're going to look forward to him competing the rest of the year. And he, even in the North Stampede game with the 2 innings that he threw, and then on Friday, you know, he went out there and competed, and he did extremely well, as did Zach Jorgensen and Race Nielsen for us. So,
Easton Gordon also picks up a win right over the weekend on the Hill?
Correct, yeah. You know, you can't leave out Easton Gordon. He come in, he's been a basketball player all winter, really hasn't done much with the pitching aspect, but he come in and competed, and he did extremely well for us as well on the mound.
You know, one of the things that stands out to me, Coach, is you guys prove that you can score a lot of runs. You know, you won a couple of games, 13-1, you know, putting up 11, 12 runs, and then you guys also manage to eke out a 5-2 win. So in the early going of the season, you've proven that you can win either game, getting it done defensively or offensively.
Absolutely. And that's probably the second highlight, Jordan, for me, is that we're able to get runners on, we're able to advance them, and then the kids are really believing in themselves, believing in the system that we're trying to instill in them, and they're just getting it done at the plate, and I couldn't be any happier.
When you travel on the road like that, Coach, it is a little bit of a journey, and you're there all weekend long. I mean, I know it can either go one of two ways. Winning makes it a lot easier, doesn't it? I mean, these first road trips of the year, when you're winning, things just seem a lot more kosher. Everything just goes a little bit more smoother.
It does, especially on the road. You know, you always worry about that in the long road trips, and what are the kids going to do and the motels and that kind of thing. But you know what? I was extremely proud of them. They took care of themselves. There were no issues. You know, they policed themselves, so to say. And they just stayed focused and focused on what our goals were when we went down to Mesquite for this tournament.
I guess that's kind of been the story all year long. You know, as you follow these kids through basketball, football, they are now into baseball, wrestling, whatever it is, it seems like the senior group at Emory High School has just been really they've been problem-free all year long.
Absolutely. You know, they've just been focused, and it seems like the group really knows what they want to get done and what they want to do and how they want to come out and compete. And I can't be more proud of what they've accomplished thus far.
Now, Coach, in your eyes, what did you want to get accomplished the most? What was at the top of your list? I mean, I know it's always great to win games, definitely, but it's a preseason tournament. So in your mind, what was the main objective of this tournament?
Really, to look at our pitching and see how we would hold up. Because honestly, I mean, it kind of shows what's going to happen maybe in a state tournament setting. And so when you look at the Thursday, Friday, Saturday schedule and having those 4 games, I was really looking to see how our pitchers would compete, what would really happen with the pitch counts and that sort of thing. And I'm extremely pleased. You know, Coach Renson and myself, when we look back on it, that was one of our main concerns, and how to manage the pitching. And that was, our biggest highlight.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, it's the is it the most important aspect of a high school baseball season, your pitching rotation?
It can be. I mean, that definitely plays into it, but also, you know, the way you manufacture runs and really all aspects of it. But more importantly, this year with the with those pitching rules, it becomes how do you manage the pitching and how do you manage, you know, where do you go from there after someone gets into trouble and the trust levels and so forth.
Again, our guest right now is Coach Sean Alton of the Emory Spartan baseball team. Coach, if I take a look at the offensive numbers, a couple of individuals that were really good for you. First off, Logan Labrum stands out. I mean, in every box score that I looked at, Logan had accumulated multiple hits, had a couple of RBIs, and this is one of the seniors that you and I had talked about last week. Looked like he performed very well for you offensively.
He did. Logan was amazing down there. He's swinging the bat really well right now, and he's just hitting the ball hard and putting things into play for us. So So he is doing extremely well for us right now.
Another one we have to talk about is Jordan Boletka as well. It looked like he performed quite well at the plate for you.
He did. You know, and really, I believe that everybody did, you know, very well in all aspects, especially throughout the five games. Really, everybody had their time to shine at the plate. And Jordan, right now, he's our leadoff hitter, and it seems like he's getting on base a lot, and we're able to capitalize on that.
Things will somewhat slow down for you. I mean, that's a lot of baseball in a three-day span, but now, Coach, you guys will move on. You'll take on the Union Cougars this Wednesday. It's going to be another road contest for you guys, so another opportunity for these kids to travel and get to know each other away from Emory High School.
Absolutely. You know, Union's a respected program, and we're looking forward to the tradition of playing them a home and away. And you know, they do have a good program, and I'm looking forward, you know, for the challenge and seeing how our kids hold up to that challenge.
Seems like we get Millard at Friday at home, Coach, and then after that, the schedule's really going to pick up. I mean, next week, you guys are extremely busy. In a seven-day span, you'll play four games. So a little bit lighter this week, and then you dive right into it.
Absolutely. It's kind of nice to have a little bit lighter schedule this week. And then next week, like you said, Jordan, it does pick up and it's going to get tougher. And I'm really interested to see how the kids respond to that and how they compete. And I hope that, you know, they're well prepared for what we've kind of had instilled with them with the schedule thus far. And I'm looking forward to it, to get us ready for that region play here in a couple weeks.
You know, talking to Coach Gordon in the past, one of the things that he always, that we would talk about is that there's just not a lot of time to actually practice. I mean, when you're playing so many games in such a short period of time, it's very difficult to actually find practice time. Not going to be the case this week. I mean, you actually have some time to take the kids out on the field and fine-tune some things. What does the schedule look like, Coach, when you have a week where you have two games compared to where you have a week where you have four games? I mean, what's the difference between the two?
Well, like you said, I mean, you just nailed it on the head, Jordan. It's time to focus on fine-tuning this team. You know, obviously, we can always get better. There's some things that we can definitely work on, and we're going to look at the small things and work on those and try to fine-tune ourselves and get better as players and a team so that come that region time and state time, we can be right there at the top with the rest of the teams in the state.
No, it's obviously still very early, Coach, but now that we're five games into it and with, you know, the winter sports season ending and the baseball picking up almost immediately, is the team where you expected them to be or maybe a little bit ahead of schedule? I mean, how do you view where this squad is at right now?
I would say probably a little bit ahead of schedule. The one thing I wanted to do was to really instill the situational hitting, and these kids are very quick learners. They picked up on that, and the way they've manufactured runs, as you mentioned before, putting up the number of runs that we have, I'm extremely pleased. Now if we can just take this momentum and continue to run with it and fine-tune, I think we're going to be a team to reckon with come later in the season.
Well, we got a fun slate of games, to say the least, right ahead again. Union on Wednesday, and then Millard Friday at home. That'll be the next home game for the team. Coach, it's always a pleasure to talk with you and get an update on what the baseball team has been doing. Congratulations on that successful weekend in Mesquite, and hopefully that momentum will carry over here over the next 3 to 4 games.
It will, and I appreciate your time, Jordan.
Definitely. Coach Sean Alton of the Emory Spartan baseball team. Again, they'll continue the season this week. Wednesday, they'll travel on the road to take on the Union Cougars. And then on Friday, they're back home to take on Millard. Very busy time for the team next week. They'll play four games in 7 days. We've got a break for just a moment. We have an NASCAR update right around the corner. Also, we'll talk NCAA tournament. The bracket is out. Some of the big surprises and more. It's all straight ahead here on this Monday edition of the show.
4, 3, 2, 1. Gentlemen! Start your engines!
It's now time for a NASCAR Sprint Cup Series update. And this past weekend, Drive Time Sports was live on location in Las Vegas gearing up for the Cobalt 400, which ended with a Martin Truex victory as he swept all three stages in the one and only race in Vegas this year. Truex Jr. managed to pass a fading Brad Keselowski at the end of the Monster Energy Cup race. Kyle Larson finished in second, followed by Chase Elliott in third. Despite a solid performance throughout the afternoon, Keselowski drifted all the way down to number five. The big fireworks came following the race on pit row as Kyle Busch engaged into an altercation with Joey Logano. On the final lap, Logano made contact with Busch, spinning him out down pit row, which sent Busch all the way to 22nd for the afternoon, while Joey Logano logged a top 10 finish. Following the victory, Martin Truex Jr. talked to the media about what was all in all just a stellar day for his team.
Yeah, last couple laps were great. Nothing out the windshields. it was a crazy race. You know, we had such a good car all day long, and felt like it slipped away from us there. You know, the two car got out front, and that last restart, and I really thought we were going to run second. So got a little bit lucky with him having an issue and got the win. But honestly, been on the other side of those things plenty of times, so it definitely feels good to, you know, take advantage of somebody else's issue for once and go to victory lane. So all in all, it was a good day, good weekend. You know, we had speed all weekend long with our Bass Pro Toyota. It was just a matter of getting the balance right, getting it driving the way I needed to. And even as, you know, close as we were yesterday in practice, we made a lot of changes last night, you know, based on feel and direction we thought we needed to go. And the guys just did a phenomenal job getting the car the way we needed it. And thankful to be able to put it all together. So feels good to be here, and first win at Vegas feels awesome.
Second place finisher Kyle Larson also addressed the media and talked about his stellar start to the 2017 campaign.
Our day was really solid. I think we finished second in the first stage, third in the second stage, and then finished second here in the race. So super happy with how our season's gotten started. Way better than where I've ever started a season. So I'm really happy about that. Proud of our team. Had fun today. The stages were really exciting, or the ends of them, because the way the cautions fell and different pit strategies and stuff, people staying out, made it exciting taking off. So really liking the format change and all that.
Third place finisher Chase Elliott says his team had a solid car throughout the day, but just not enough to grab the win.
Yeah, we had a really solid car all day. I felt like we were just a tick off Brad in the 78 and just needed a little bit more. I have to kind of get back and think about what we needed and where we needed to be better at. And had a poor restart there at the end and kind of got behind, but got lucky to kind of end up where we did with what happened. So I'm really proud of the way we've performed. Our pit stops have been great. Our cars have been good. Been able to run, solidly in the top five the past couple weeks, which is great for me and our team. And we just got to keep that going and find that next little bit.
The Cobalt 400 is the third race of the season. As it sits right now, Brad Keselowski is at the very top of the standings. He has 132 points. Kyle Larson is in second at 131, followed by Chase Elliott in third, Martin Truex Jr. fourth, Joey Logano fifth, Ryan Blaney sixth, Kurt Busch seventh, Kevin Harvick is eighth, Casey Kane ninth, Jamie McMurray tenth, Trevor Bayne is 11th, Clint Bowyer is 12th, Matt Kenseth is 13th, Eric Amarola 14th, and Denny Hamlin 15th. NASCAR Monster Energy Cup Racing will make its return to KOAL this weekend. Up next, the circuit will travel to Phoenix for the fourth race of the season. That'll be this Sunday at 1:30 p.m. You can listen to all the archived interviews from Friday's Drive Time Sports regarding NASCAR Monster Energy Cup Racing and the Xfinity Series at CastleCountryRadio.com.
With the sixth pick in the 2014 NBA Draft, the Boston Celtics select Marcus Smart from Oklahoma State University.
This is Marcus Smart from the Boston Celtics, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
Marcus Smart, what a spin move and a finish. Hard to handle Marcus Smart, whether he's outside or inside the paint.
Obviously, we'll be talking a lot of college basketball in the coming days. It's just about time for some March Madness. Tomorrow, the first four will get underway. The Pac-12, they get four teams. A little bit of a disappointment, I think, for the Pac-12. It was about a month ago we were talking about the possibility of seven squads, and it turns out they get just four, three of which are, top three seeds in the tournament. Arizona gets the number two out of the West bracket, Oregon a number three out of the Midwest, UCLA the number three out of the South. And then USC gets Providence in the play-in game. But I think from this point until the tournament games actually start, and this is how bad the first four is, it's more entertaining to talk about snubs than it is about the first four. I hate the first four. The field of 68, I hate it. It's really just never made sense to me, the first four. Because we have four teams looking to become the 11th seed in the tournament. So you have to play into the tournament to get the 11th seed. And then you have four other teams playing to become the 16th seed, while we already have two other squads notched in at the 16th spot. It's just never made sense to me. I mean, it would make more sense if the first four was designed around teams looking to become the 16th seed in each bracket. Like, that would make sense, right? You have four games. So you have eight teams competing to be the final team into the tournament. That would make more sense, but they do it the way they do it. There's no reason to argue about it at this particular time. But let's take a look at the NCAA tournament front to back before we go over our snubs. And we will begin in the West bracket. Gonzaga is going to go up against San Diego State. This is going to be in Salt Lake City and Northwestern Vanderbilt. So there's your 116, 8-9 matchup. Gonzaga, San Diego State, Northwestern, Vanderbilt. In Buffalo, again, this is the West region, Notre Dame, the 5 seed, gets Princeton. West Virginia, the number 4 seed, gets Bucknell. Orlando, Maryland against Xavier, that's a 6-11. Florida State, number 3, going up against number 14, Florida Gulf Coast. St. Mary's, a number 7 squad at Salt Lake City, will take on Virginia Commonwealth. And then Arizona, a number 2 seed, they go up against North Dakota. That's a 2-15, also at Salt Lake City. That's the list of first-round matchups. So we get quite a bit of basketball in Salt Lake this year. Should be entertaining, no doubt. That is the West bracket. Let's move over and take a look at the South. This is in the bottom right. North Carolina, the number 1 seed. They're at 27-7. They'll take on Texas Southern, the number 16. Arkansas and Seton Hall is an 8-9 matchup. Minnesota and Tennessee State, that's a 5-12. Butler, the 4 seed. Winthrop, the 13. Cincinnati will go up against either Kansas State or Wake Forest because, again, that's two of the 11 seeds fighting to get into the tournament. Cincinnati's a 6 squad. UCLA at 29-4, despite the fact that they were ranked in the top 3 going into the conference tournament, they're a 3 seed. Again, something I just don't quite understand, but they go up against Kent State. Dayton will take on Wichita State. Wichita State's a team we're going to talk about in just a moment. That's a 7-10 matchup. Wichita State, the lower seed. And then Kentucky taking on Northern Kentucky. That's a 2-15 matchup. Let's move to the top part of the bracket in the Midwest. This is a 1-16. Kansas is the 1 seed in the Midwest. And the Jayhawks will take on either UC Davis or North Carolina Central. Those two teams will go at it in the first four matchup. Miami of Florida, they're an 8. They take on Michigan State, who was a 9. Michigan State gets a 9 seed despite being 19-14 on the season. Iowa State a 5, Nevada a 12, Purdue 4, Vermont 13, Creighton is a 6. They'll take on Rhode Island. Number 3, Oregon, going up against Iona. Number 7 is Michigan. They get Oklahoma State, and then Louisville gets a number 2 spot. That does surprise me a bit. They'll take on Jacksonville State. We'll move over to the East bracket. Villanova, the number 1 team of the country and the defending national champs. Here's a bit of history for you. They have 31 wins. That is the most for any defending national champion as Villanova looks to defend its crown. Now, they too will take on the winner of a first four matchup. And this one, it's New Orleans going up against Mount St. Mary's. So, again, one of those two squads will actually get a crack at the defending national champs. You want to talk about a Cinderella story. Wisconsin will take on Virginia Tech in the 8-9 matchup. Virginia going up against NC Wilmington. Virginia's the number 5 seed. Florida against Eastern Tennessee State. That's a 4-13. SMU will take on either Providence or USC. Those two are locked in a first four matchup. Baylor goes toe-to-toe with New Mexico State. Baylor the 3. South Carolina the 7 from this region. They'll go toe-to-toe with Marquette. And then Duke grabs the number 2 seed and they take on Troy. Now, I can relate some of what I'm going to talk about here in college basketball to college football, because everybody wanted the playoff in college football, right? That's what everyone wanted. And for the most part, college football has gotten away with it, and there has been some controversy, but things have typically played themselves out. College basketball, we have a controversy. It seems like every year there's a team that believes they were snubbed, and you can make a case for them to get into the tournament, despite the fact that 68 teams now go. Now, here's the problem with college basketball. You can't just say Illinois State was snubbed. They deserve to be in the tournament, because that means you have to remove a team from the actual bracket. So who would you remove from the bracket to put in a team like Illinois State? Let's take a look at what they actually accomplished throughout the year. Their strength of schedule is terrible. Okay, but they finished with more wins than any team left out. They had the 123rd ranked schedule. They had a lack of quality wins. They beat Wichita State once, lost to them once, and then lost to them again in the conference championship game. So that's why they needed an at-large bid. They tied with Wichita State at the top of the conference for the league crown. Didn't play anybody with a top 50 RPI, and that worked against them. They did go 17-1 in conference play, and this is where I go back to the fact that conference play does not mean a whole lot anymore if you don't perform in the tournament, because in 18 games they went 17-1, yet they lost one game in the conference tournament, which was the championship game, and because of it, they are not going to the NCAA tournament. I get it. Coach Dan Mueller's upset. He probably should be. But the Missouri Valley Conference is down this year, and I think the committee had the consensus thought on this because Wichita State is the number 10 seed. It's really tough. You have to look at the body of work, and you also have to look at the final four at-large bids in the NCAA tournament. They went to teams from major conferences. USC goes 24-9 in the Pac-12. They also beat UCLA. Providence goes 20-12. Wake Forest goes 19-13. Kansas State goes 20-13. Is that more impressive when you look at the body of work than Illinois State going 27-6? When only 16 teams in the NCAA had more Division I wins than Illinois State. It's tough. It's tough. I don't know who you remove. All I'm saying is we eliminate this problem by a team going 17-1 in conference play, getting an automatic bid by winning their conference outright. Now, they wouldn't have won the conference outright because they tied with Wichita State. So even this one is a little bit tricky. But I have seen in the past teams put forth brilliant regular seasons like this and not get into the NCAA tournament. Who were some of the other big snubs? Probably Cal. I talk about the Pac-12 being a disappointment, only getting four teams, and I think you can make a strong case for Cal. Apparently, they just did not have enough on their resume to get in. If they would have beat Oregon in the Pac-12 semis, they probably would have gotten in. And see, that's where the conference tournaments come into play. It wouldn't have been an automatic bid for Cal had they beat Oregon in the semis. The automatic bid only would have come had they won the Pac-12 championship. But we can look at the body of work at Cal and say, okay, they're beating Oregon right now. You look at the body of work, that's an impressive victory at the end of the season. Cal gets the nod over, say, Providence. That's legitimate. And I'm just throwing Providence out there just for the sake of the argument. They had an RPI of 53. And they didn't have any bad losses all year, and that's what kept them in a discussion. And they were really good against the Utes. That contest, the quarterfinals victory over Utah, was a really good game. Cal didn't get in. I think Cal has a legitimate gripe. Georgia, I don't know if they were really snubbed. I mean, they almost beat Florida and Kentucky in overtime losses. They couldn't get that marquee win throughout the year. Vanderbilt did it against Florida. Top 20 strength of schedule looks solid, but their top wins were all against bubble teams. Georgia's a team that's very close. 9-9 in conference play, 9-14 overall. They play in a very difficult conference. They just needed another win or two. Syracuse, again, I don't know that Syracuse didn't deserve to be in. They had an RPI of 84, way too high. I don't care if they squeaked in and went all the way to the Final Four last season. It doesn't matter. Top 50 wins in bunches. They had a marquee victory over Duke, Florida State, and Virginia. That looked good, but they only won two games away from home all year long, and that had to have been a deciding factor. So again, I don't think you put Syracuse in. Another name that's been thrown out there is Illinois. No, I think, again, you look at the numbers. They had an RPI in the 60s. Their best win all year long came against Virginia Commonwealth. They did beat Northwestern, they did beat Ohio State, Michigan, Michigan State, and Iowa, but those are borderline teams that barely squeaked in that all had better records. I don't know that there's a legitimate gripe out of anyone who did not get in the tournament this year outside of Illinois State. And for those who continue to say that conference tournaments produce Cinderella stories, look, Illinois State would have been a Cinderella story at 17-1 in conference play in the tournament going toe-to-toe with the likes, say they're a 14 seed, going up against Florida State or going up against UCLA. You're a Cinderella story. You're Illinois State. It still produces Cinderella stories. In fact, it gives us a better opportunity to see a Cinderella story. The one thing I wish the NCAA would change, conference outright winners get the automatic bids. The only team I think that could make an honest gripe, and again, when you look at the numbers, Illinois State's schedule, their strength of schedule, and their quality wins, it's not going to match up to the likes of USC or Wake Forest. It's just not going to happen. It's a tough job to field a 68-team tournament and pick from 100-and-whatever teams there are in Division I. I do believe close to the 68 best teams in the country are in the NCAA tournament, given the format that we have to go by today. We're going to break for just a moment. We have more Drive Time Sports coming up right after this. We'll close out this Monday edition of the show.
Hey, this is Nick Tropiano with the Anaheim Angels, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
Back for the final segment of this edition of Drive Time Sports. I'm sure you've been in this situation before. You're at work, you're standing around the water cooler, or you're in the break room or whatever, and you start talking about sports movies. You know, some of your favorite sports movies. We had this conversation here at Castle Country Radio about 2 weeks ago. We were talking about the Rocky movies. And in my mind, I know it's hard to top the original, but I think Creed with Michael B. Jordan, I think it topped it. That's how the debate got going. I had people looking at me telling me I'm an idiot. That's not a Rocky movie. So this kind of works hand in hand with it. Anyways, you have debates about movies. And one of the best Rocky movies, at least in the eyes of most fans, I think is Rocky III. Because there's a lot of star power with Rocky III. You know, you get Apollo Creed comes back as the trainer. Mickey dies in number three. Hulk Hogan is Thunderlips. Clubber Lang is Mr. T, and he was pretty iconic. Everybody loved Mr. T at that particular time. Sylvester Stallone on Instagram posted a picture of himself doing a handstand in the ring wearing Apollo's trunks. And he decided to let everyone on Instagram know what the diet was for him during the filming of Rocky III. This is incredible. Here's the quote from Sylvester Stallone. During this period, I only ate small portions of oatmeal cookies made with brown rice and up to 25 cups of coffee a day with honey and a couple of scoops of tuna fish. At the time, my body fat had gone down to 2.9, which is really dangerous. I may have looked really good on the outside, but on the inside, it was a very dangerous thing to do, but I wanted the movie to be about change. Stallone continues to talk about how his body had to look a certain way for this movie. Then he starts talking about the boxing training. While getting smashed by super strong Clubber Lang continuously for 4 months of rehearsal plus the fight tended to wear a person out, so I would literally go back to the corner between rounds when I wasn't directing and try to get some blood back into my head so I could carry on with the complicated fight choreography. It's funny, I never knew this picture existed. And then there's a picture of him doing a handstand. Sounds grueling, right? Anyways, I thought it was kind of ironic that this popped up after we were having the Rocky conversation at work just the other day. Definitely one of the most iconic, if not the most iconic, sports figure in fictional movie history. Rocky Balboa, Sylvester Stallone's diet during Rocky III. I got to thank Coach Sean Alton as we come up on the final couple of minutes of this show. Always great to get some Emory baseball here on the show. Tomorrow we're going to flip and start talking track and field. It's spring season. I mean, it's finally here. Baseball and softball's off and running. Every other sport will pick up here in the coming days. Coach Jimmy Jukes of the Carbon Dino Track and Field Squad will join us on the show tomorrow. Coach Jeff Cincinnatus is scheduled to join us on Wednesday to talk some Carbon High School baseball. So we have a lot of local sports coming up here in the coming days. And, of course, we'll continue to talk NCAA basketball as we gear up for the tournament. I will catch you tomorrow, same time, same place, right here on KOAL 107.3 FM, 750 AM. You can move over to CastleCountryRadio.com, click on the Drive Time Sports link. All of the past week's shows up, ready for you to listen on demand. So go check that out at CastleCountryRadio.com. I'll catch you tomorrow. Be safe. I am out.